Welcome back to the Bugle. Welcome back to what's this episode 3 or 4 of Behind the Podcast, where we're talking to mostly so far it's been Bitcoin podcasters. So we are joined by a colleague. She's the first female guest that we've had, and I think the first socialist guest that we've had, but not the first Bitcoin podcaster. So I'm trying to say so. We're talking to Margo. You might know her as Jin Erso on Twitter. How's it going, Margo?
Oh, it's going great. Thank you for having me. I'm really honored to be part of this show.
What is how many episodes of the Progressive Bitcoin or the Progressive Bitcoin podcast have you've done so far?
So we just released our second episode this week of me being the host of the show. So we're doing it once a month. So yeah, you know, it's keeping it chill, playing around with the format. It's been fun so far.
Were you nervous before your first one? I know I was shaking in my boots for my first one. I remember that day very clearly.
No, I wasn't nervous because I brought on a friend on the first episode. So I actually have known Alan Minsky since I was reporting on the Occupy movement. That's how I met, and actually he opened a lot of doors for me doing this kind of work. So he brought me to the local radio station, and I was I was the super duper associate producer on a political show there, and I also did some reporting for the evening news. So I have a background in this, so I wasn't really nervous.
You're a journalist.
Yeah, I mean, in a previous life, I was a journalist. I decided to go back to school, to graduate school, because it's really hard to make money as a journalist. So I was like, my options are I'm going to be on local news, and I did this broadcast journalist camp thing, and it was really uncomfortable because all the women that were there were dressed in tiny little outfits, and everybody behind the cameras were men, and it was just really an odd dynamic, and they were talking about like getting agents and stuff. I'm like, I was just, you know, trying to do reporting. This is not for me. I think I'm just going to stick to being a scientist then. So, yeah, so I kind of stepped away from that. So, yeah, it's kind of my return to journalism, but more of a talking head.
Yeah, I mean, I know that Richard can share his story because he had a similar story where he had to walk away from journalism. But even as a Bitcoin podcaster, doing the Bugle, you notice that some people are just there to go to the parties and the Bitcoin conferences, and some people are there to be Bitcoin podcasters and to study game theory, with their guests. And so we get it. Yeah. So, but it's another thing is like a few years ago, it used to be common that it's tough, like you said, to necessarily make it as a journalist, that they'd get laid off and they would be told to learn to code. And now I think journalists are having to learn to podcast. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, you got to learn to podcast. You got to learn a Substack. You got to learn to just, be your own, create your own cult of personality. I mean, that's my goal. In fact, I was just, I was just talking about this with my friend Shinobi. I was like, Shinobi, I need to create a cult of personality so that I can, get rich off of NFTs. So yeah, that's my ultimate goal as a journalist running the Progressive Bitcoiner. I'm really hoping to get rich off of NFTs. I'm doing it for PodComp because they disapproved me, and I'm having second thoughts about this disapproval. Yeah.
Well, I do have to say, Shinobi, according to a lot of women, is pretty hot.
I mean, I have never seen Shinobi's face, obviously, so I couldn't say, because, he's always covered up at conferences.
Right.
But
if you didn't know about it, you'd think he was knee seeks.
If I did it, I mean, I for a long time I thought underneath the mask, you know, like the COVID mask and the sunglasses, that he was Meeseeks. And that time in July at Nashville when he showed up as Meeseeks,
naked on stage?
Yeah, I thought that he was, that was like his coming out thing. Mm. So
the first time you saw Shinobi, you thought he was coming out. Okay.
I thought he was coming out like, just okay. Like, you know, I'm no longer going to be so privacy minded. I'm just going to let everybody know who I am. I'm Meeseeks. So it was kind of, it really confused me when I realized he wasn't Meeseeks underneath the mask. I'm still working through that.
And what kind of cult of personality did you decide that she needed to build, or that she wanted to build? You know, men have a saying that he who makes a meme out of himself gets rid of the pain of being a man. Like, what was yours? Like, what was your, you wanted to make NFTs and be a shitcoiner? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really inspired by this, by Donald Trump and the cult of personality around him. I know I am an anarcho-socialist. I'm an anarchist and a socialist. I'm anti-capitalist. But on the other hand, I feel like, you know, Bitcoin right now is going through a huge transition. And yeah, I don't know. I just thought, like, if Trump can do it and still have David Bailey support him and give him money and, you know, build a whole empire and conference around Trump, even though he's like shilling
David wouldn't do that if somebody wasn't DeFi. A true Bitcoiner.
Yeah. So I feel like this is the natural progression. So my hope is I can build a cult of personality like Trump in this space and that just get David Bailey to, you know, give me all of his money.
Hell yeah.
All of his Bitcoin. Yeah. And maybe I can sell him an NFT, you know.
I'm curious. So one of the things that many people that are more left-leaning believe in culturally is gender equality, right? And so I have this concern that men are going to have serious issues selling meme coins and NFTs this cycle, and there's going to be a massive gender pay gap there. Even if people think these individuals like Shinobi are hot, I don't think Shinobi is going to be able to sell very many NFTs because there's just not enough women in Bitcoin to support the demand side to keep up with all the men that will buy women's NFTs. I think the only way that really gets fixed is for these Bitcoin companies to grow so big that there's such a big demand for HR that they have to listen to their employees' podcast to make sure that they're, you know, essentially compliant. And that's the only way Shinobi could compete in selling NFTs. But like, how do we deal with this issue, which is the coming gender pay gap in regards to meme coins?
This is a really, really important question. I'm really glad you asked it, because gender equality and closing the pay gap is really important for progressive Bitcoiners. I mean, we believe in an equal society. So yeah, I think there's no easy answer. And one possibility, you know, is it's just a transition. Become a woman and fix the supply. I mean, there's plenty of supply, so fix the demand side. Become a woman. And I think if more Bitcoin men transitioned into being trans women, we could solve this gender pay gap. So I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that trans ideology will go mainstream this cycle in Bitcoin, and we start to see a lot more people come out this way and you know, declare their love for Shinobi and buy his NFTs so that he doesn't starve.
His compliance token. Yeah, and he's got a PodCon compliance token, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I really don't want to see him starve just because he's a man.
Well,
yeah.
This is why I have to disagree. I agree with you. What you're saying is what you're trying to do. But what's really happening is the leftist HRLEs are convincing the government to let shitcoins just run rampant, because they know that men will buy a bunch of shitcoins, and then when the market crashes and it gets to zero, that loss, those capital losses will offset the salaries that they make that are higher, and it'll close the gender pay gap. Basically, that 30% of their net worth that they lose makes up for the salary. But that is traumatizing. That is destroying families. It's hurting men, and men are the victims here. And the answer is not. That's why they are turning. They're transitioning, and they're becoming shit. You know, the only way to make their money back is to become female shitcoin NFT salesmen. Yep. And they need to kind of mature and become men and realize that hard money is hard to use. It's not about shitcoining. It's about having to spend 40 hours listening to Bitcoin podcasts and watching BTC sessions, lightning tutorials. Because that takes a long time, and they have to do the work. I don't think that I don't think they should become female Bitcoin podcasters.
I think men are in a really tough place right now, which is that if they have to transition, so if they transition and they're employed, they're going to get a 20% pay reduction, right? And sometimes it takes, you know, a little bit of time to build up a following to be able to sell your meme coin.
Do you believe that they should have workplace protection so that they don't take the pay cut?
You know, part of me says workplace protections like that are really important for these men. They're struggling, and you're taking that pay cut, it would be really bad for their mental health. Hmm. On the other hand, you know, there's always risks, and you know, we should let the market decide. Let the labor market decide. No?
The free market, yeah.
The free market.
That sounds very capitalistic, like pro-capitalism. You believe that the market should sort it out.
Well, I think the market giveth and the market taketh. And you know, there is a form of anti-capitalist anarchism called mutualism or market anarchism. And there is a belief that if you have truly free markets, truly freed competitive markets that are not based, that, you know, don't allow for monopolies and antitrust and or whatever, that you know, whatever they call that. And yeah, like the market can actually be a tool for communism. I think that's absolutely possible. So, you know, I think in this day and age, we should, on the one hand, there's an argument to let the dice fall and roll where they go where they may, and see how, you know, how socialist we can make the market. Maybe the market will fix this gender gap. I don't know. I'm open to all opportunities, all possibilities. Some that's something that I talk a lot about. So I'm willing.
And so you don't think that the strategic Bitcoin reserve is a way to use the market to achieve out, you know, basically fix everything. I mean, you can speed up hyper Bitcoinization. So like if Donald Trump just apes smash buys in Bitcoin with the Federal Reserve printer, that accelerates fixing the world. We're fixing the money. We're fixing the world. That's why we're strengthening the dollar. If you say fix the money, that's what that means. You know, once you go on the Bitcoin standard, now you fixed fiat currency. That's what we're doing. That's how we're fixing the world. And you do, that sounds like something, that sounds like a utopia. That sounds like something leftists believe in, utopias. Why don't you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, fix the money, fix the world. Sounds great. Fix the fiat. I mean,
right.
like, yeah, I think, you know, I thought this was about separation of money and state, but it sounds like it's about keeping state and money unified and fixing the dollar so that dollar hegemony can exist forever. Now, this is really an opposition, I would say, to leftists, because we really are opposed to U.S. global hegemony. It's obviously killed a lot of people, a lot of innocent lives, and exploited a lot of people, especially in the global South. So, yeah, Bitcoin strategic reserve isn't the most appealing to a leftist, I would say. I think leftists are probably less inclined to support the dollar, but you know, it seems like right now that's where Bitcoiners are at. They really, really want the dollar to succeed. So I don't know. I'm reassessing.
What do you think about Tether? Do leftists approve, or like, are they a fan of Tether? Or is that just an extension of dollar?
Yeah. The people that have been murdered in the global South for the U.S. economy, they like Tether.
How do you explain that? And how do you personally explain that? But I'm just saying that's like an open question. But actually, how do you explain that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's true. A lot of people in the global South use Tether. They do. I mean, it's a stable, right? The value is stable, and day-to-day risks are probably seemingly lower when you're using a stable coin. So I guess that's why it's so appealing. But I don't know that leftists support Tether. I don't know. I don't think they've really given it much thought, actually. I can really say. I can tell you that people listen to the progressive Bitcoiner probably don't like Tether. I think Tether is sort of like a Trojan horse for the dollar. So not really a fan. Yeah.
That's understandable. It kind of goes, this is a good segue into Trump. So Trump, I'm blanking on his name, but his commerce secretary from Cantor Fitzgerald is a big fan of Tether, which means that Trump will probably be a big fan of Tether. So I guess there's two questions.
Howard Lutnick.
Yeah. I guess one of the first question is men that are listening to this podcast that are frustrated by the potential losses in earnings that they're going to suffer for not being able to sell as many NFTs, that are looking to possibly transition to help fix that issue. Is that safe to do in Trump's America? What are the biggest changes that as a progressive Bitcoiner are concerning to you in this shift into Trump's America, into Tether being a big part of the U.S. government and economic policy?
Yeah, I guess, you know, my concerns are that men are going to really become shitcoiners, true shitcoiners under this administration. And is it safe? Is it safe to be a toxic maximalist under these conditions? You know, I think that this is something that we're not really talking about in this space. I'm not hearing the podcast influencers really addressing this. Hmm. And it's concerning. I mean, will you be able to, under a Trump administration that supports Tether, will you be able to sun your balls? Hmm. I'm worried that you won't. I think that's going to really damage a lot of men in this space. I mean, just going beyond the gender pay gap when their NFTs lose value. But if they can't sun their balls and they can't eat only steak, I'm just really worried. I'm worried about the mental health crisis that's going to develop.
As trans women, they won't have the right to sun their balls.
Yeah, that's devastating. You know,
the one of the big problems that, like what you said, it's not going to be safe to be a toxic maxi. Donald Trump made us think that he was really signing up for the people who totally like the ghost of Dick Whitman, Stefan LeVere, like people who did not tolerate shitcoinery. And it turns out that he's not as friendly. He doesn't believe the same things we believe. And he was talking about Bitcoin maximalists at one of his press conferences, and he said that some of the Bitcoin maximalists were very fine people. And the media caught wind of that, and he walked it back, and he totally threw us under the bus and said that he did not say that Bitcoin maximalists were some very fine people. Do you worry that being a Bitcoin maximalist, being a freedom advocate, you think it, having podcasts which are very Bitcoin maximalist, potentially Donald Trump could come after and try to censor our content or discredit Bitcoiners like us? Who are maximalists?
Yeah. I think it's a real possibility. You know, if Bitcoin maximalist podcasters become a threat to this administration, I think we really should take it seriously that he could come after you, come after these podcasters. I mean, I just can't imagine, you know, what BTC Sessions would do. You know, like, there he is talking about how to set up a cold card, and one day, like, Trump's like, no, out. And sends his goons, and we never see him again. Hmm. Or, you know, Marty Bent, God forbid something happens to him, or Odell for, you know, talking about, you know, hash rate risks, or, you know, the latest conspiracy about Russia. I mean, I just don't know. I'm really not ready for this future. I'm really concerned for their welfare, and I just feel like we've made a pact with the devil here for a number go up.
I think we just got all, I like Bitcoin, buy my shitcoin by Trump. I think he pulled the one over on everyone.
Do you, I mean, in under the Trump administration, if they really go hard in support of Bitcoin mining and maybe, like, you know, they subsidize it or whatever, but do you think that you'll be able to, do a really good, like, lobbying salary paid in Bitcoin for being able to do research that shows that Bitcoin mining is good for climate change?
Yeah, I really hope so. I mean, I think that if I could get just like the most well-paid lobbying position in Bitcoin mining, that, you know, I could really have a lot of Bitcoin. And I don't know, you know, I mean, I am a socialist, and I would definitely distribute some of that wealth. Certainly, you know, I would go through, you know, and do some philanthropy, and, you know, distribute some of my Bitcoin from all of my lobbying and shilling. I would absolutely do that. Help support these mutual aid groups, you know, and maybe start a nonprofit to help Bitcoin podcast men who transition, obviously, to close the gender gap. But yeah, sure. I mean, I'm hopeful. I gotta look out for me sometimes, you know. Like I said, I gotta build this cult of personality. And I gotta do that.
Hell yeah. That brings up a good point. One of the things that, you know, we talk about is that you have to buy Bitcoin so you can be able to afford to pay taxes. Because taxes are getting expensive, and it's inflation, everything's crazy. You just need Bitcoin, or you won't be able to afford your taxes. But you are on the side that wants to make taxes more expensive. So I'm curious, is like, how do you look at Bitcoin and solving the problem of being able to raise taxes more efficiently?
I mean, if the price of Bitcoin goes up, there's more to tax. And, you know, let's do it. Let's tax more. And I think it'll be way more efficient because price of Bitcoin keeps going up, number go up. So there's just a lot more for us to take and redistribute. So I'm hopeful.
So I think, say, earlier you said that watching Trump's ascent back to the presidency kind of inspire you. You're like an anarchist socialist, and you could still feel inspired by Donald Trump. And I think that that's kind of the magic of Donald Trump. He brings everybody together for just maybe not the same, but different reasons. And here, I think, is where we can come together. It's that you could get behind the strategic Bitcoin reserve, and Donald Trump could pump Bitcoin to the moon, and that would solve the problem of getting people to pay more taxes. Everybody wins.
Yeah, you know, this is an angle. It could be good for climate change. You know, it's an angle that I really hadn't considered, that nation state adoption of Bitcoin strategic reserve, fixing fiat, could actually have an inverse effect of undoing climate change through higher taxation. You know, this is really making me reconsider a lot of my own framework and views on how the world works. So, yeah, I really, you know, this is a lot for me to think about right now. I don't want to commit to anything yet.
Right. I think that, yeah, I think it would be super ironic, right? That people, the right wingers who mock, they mock you on Twitter. They say, oh, I think that I can fix the weather by paying taxes. And it's like, actually, because Bitcoin fixes this, you can.
Yeah, actually, Bitcoin does fix this through higher taxes. Yeah,
right.
I think it's great. I think this is genius because, you know, the thing that I used to worry about was that if you keep teaching the government about how Bitcoin works and to accumulate Bitcoin, that it's going to pique their interest to the point that they're going to want to control it and tax it and do all these things that would not be great for self-custody and for a lot of the human rights stuff. But now I'm reconsidering this. Yeah, now I'm thinking we can really solve a lot of big problems with a Bitcoin strategic reserve. And I think we could really, really fix the weather. Yeah. With this. Yeah.
You could prevent the men who are experiencing tragic loss of their net worth during bear markets by preventing the bear market. You would prevent all these other cryptos from crashing. They would, you know, so they wouldn't have capital losses to write off. They would actually be paying taxes. They could afford to pay their taxes. And, you know, you mentioned that there will always be some people who self-custody, but with MicroStrategy, BlackRock, Coinbase, the people who self-custody, it's going to be a rounding error. They want so much Bitcoin profits to tax from the ETF and just people on custodials that they won't even matter. It'll be, you know, the climate, the environment. I guess to sum it up, if Trump comes in and just uses Bitcoin and pumps it to the moon and we all become, you know, billionaires, that is, in the tax implication wise, so good for the environment. Like, so bullish on solving climate change, like faster, maybe before even the next halving.
That would be amazing. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I think, yeah, like you were saying, like Trump inspires people from all sorts of walks of life. You know, it's a big umbrella. Everyone's welcome. And yeah, I think Bitcoin going to the moon, higher taxes can really solve this problem. So
right.
Yeah, I think this is great. And, you know, I think it's really going to help those podcasters that can't sell their NFTs, because, you know, once government gets involved, then the government can start manipulating the market too. Now, hear me out. This sounds crazy, but government, the Federal Reserve, starts artificially pumping the price of podcast compliant NFTs. Everybody wins. The men in this space win. And I think that's good for the gender. that gender disparity that we've been talking about.
Hell yeah. I mean, if anybody who listened to the Bugle Weekly podcast in the past year knows that we harped endlessly on the government is non-compliant, the government that we've been having for the past few years. And if we just out-comply the government, we will defeat them. And that's how we separate might from state. And we've done that. We've out-complied. We won. We now have Bitcoiners in like all the cabinet positions. Bitcoiners run in the health department. We got Tether guys running the commerce department. Hulk Hogan and CZ and Brian from Coinbase are coming to the White House. We're all in the White House now. We get to separate money from state, and we get to do that by pumping the ever-living shit out of Bitcoin. And once everybody can afford to pay their taxes, that's how we separate money from state. If you pay your taxes, the state will leave you alone. They will. You can play video games. You can do whatever you want. You can live on your citadel. As long as you can afford your taxes, we'll stay out of your life. And then, boom, that's state and money are separate now.
Yeah,
because you don't absolutely have to think about it.
Yeah. You don't have to think about it anymore. It just becomes like everyday life. You know, you turn on the light switch and the lights turn on. I mean, how does that work? You know, how do magnets work, right? Like,
you could spend all your free time listening to bull market Bitcoin podcasts because it's always a bull market. It's always going up.
Absolutely. And just think of how many new bull market Bitcoin podcasts will come out of this. I mean, this could be a revolution in Bitcoin podcasting like we've never experienced before.
You would just collect royalties from your fountain beasts, and they would just keep going up in value. Everybody could retire.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just thinking about all the things that I could do in my free time after this.
And if everybody was doing nothing but sitting around listening to Bitcoin podcasts, there would be way less carbon emissions.
Absolutely. And less wars. So again, Bitcoin fixes this. Bitcoin fixes fiat by boosting fiat, which boosts the price of Bitcoin. And we end all wars because Bitcoin podcasts go to the moon. And we reduce our emissions because we just don't ever leave our homes because we have to keep consuming Bitcoin bull market podcasts. This is a solution to a problem that I have been really thinking about for a really long time. And, you know, I used to think that the solution was Bitcoin was a vehicle for system change, you know, like Bitcoin exists outside of the existing financial system. And if we move everything, all forms of capital out of this system, this broken financial system, and into a new one, using Bitcoin as that primary tool, we could fix a lot of these fundamental issues. But now I'm seeing that, you know, my view on Bitcoin is totally wrong. And that actually we can solve this with a combination of government endorsing number go up, higher taxes, and yeah, more podcasts, more Bitcoin bull market podcasts. This is genius. Yeah, thank you, Rod. Thank you for really opening my eyes.
Can I ask you a question? So this is just like a fundamental philosophical, like anarcho-socialist or whatever the correct political pronouns you prefer. So like I consider myself my political pronouns are cigarette capitalist, which I think is very different to your ideology. And I'm kind of unfamiliar with it. So in a second, I want to hear your political pronouns, but I want to understand. So in your philosophical world view, how does ownership work? Can you own an idea, or does everybody own an idea?
Are ideas invented or discovered?
Yeah, that as well.
If it's invented, you could have a patent or a trademark or a copyright, or you could own that capital. It's an idea. Or are they discovered? Is it just something that you observed in the universe, saw a pattern, and benefit. It's a tool you benefited from, and you can't own that. So that's how I would frame that for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Deep question. So yeah, my preferred political pronouns are libertarian socialist, I would say. And, you know, I come out of this rich tradition that goes back to the Industrial Revolution, where Proudhon was the first to declare himself an anarchist. And yeah, you know, property is something that we view very differently from the capitalist mode, which is in capitalism, you know, property really has to be defended and protected by, you know, a monopoly on violence. And property is really tied to scarcity. If you have an abundance of something, it's harder to turn into property, something that you can turn into a commodity and buy and sell. And with ideas are truly fundamentally abundant. And whether they're discovered or, you know, what was the other discovered or what was the other
invented or discovered? Invented.
Yeah, whether they were invented or discovered isn't so important. It's really what matters is how many ideas are there out there. From a libertarian socialist perspective, we say, you know, there's a lot of ideas out there, and there's probably as many ideas out there as there are grains of sand. So, you know, there's not a lot of value to grains of sand. So I would say, you know, ideas are not private property unless you can set up some laws like patent laws and patent your idea. But in a world where you didn't have patent laws, then I think ideas would just be, you know, out there. You know, I mean, Bitcoin is an idea that nobody really owns. It's open source technology, free and open source. And it's not anyone, the network itself is no one's prop.
So what I'm worried about,
property. Yeah.
What I'm worried about is that at some point, if people don't believe that Bitcoin is, that you can own Bitcoin, obviously you can't own the, like, who created Bitcoin, who controls Bitcoin. Well, if they start to think, maybe even though I listened to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts every single week for years and years, and I sacrificed parties and time with my family and friends because I had a good idea, and I had a good idea to buy Bitcoin, and they decide that my good idea to buy Bitcoin, you know, didn't come with all that hard work of listening to Bitcoin podcasts, and they say that I can't own the private keys just because I had a good idea of listening to Bitcoin podcasts. Then, like, how would you protect self-custody?
I think you have to watch a lot of Bitcoin podcasts to really know how to protect your self-custody. I think that's the bottom line. You know, just because you had one good idea to buy Bitcoin doesn't mean that you're going to have to pay taxes. You know, I think if you listen to what Bitcoin did, I think you would disagree.
That's true. That's true. That is, sometimes we'll say it's almost like a yin and a yang situation, because you said libertarian socialist. So that's like, you know, it's like Monero influencer, right? It's like, it sounds like a contradiction. How do you explain to somebody who's listening to this, who says, I'm a libertarian, or like, she's not a libertarian, what do you, because I don't think there's that many socialists on the other side who disagree with that label. Or maybe I'm wrong about that. Do socialists ever tell you that you're no socialist if you're a libertarian?
No, I think that there has always been this push and pull and this critique of socialism or communism or Marxism from an anarchist perspective. I mean, really the defining difference is that one group believed that you had to go through the state And another group was like, actually, you know, you just got to get rid of the state. That's part of the problem. And so for a libertarian socialist, you know, they're it's not just end the state. It's also end the capitalist mode of production. So that's really where that comes from. And actually, you know, right or like American style libertarianism, the Libertarian Party does, and in its origins, take a lot from left anarchism, left libertarianism, because it came first, basically. Rothbard pulled a lot from that. So, you know, it's not really a contradiction. I mean, it's really the original form. And it was just about whether the state, how should the state disappear? And,
okay.
Yeah, anarchists
so,
originally
yeah.
took to violence to try to get rid of the state.
Gotcha. So you would say that like the American Libertarian Party is kind of like Bitcoin Cash. And your flavor of libertarian anarchist socialism is Bitcoin, you know, core, OG.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. We are the OGs. You know, we are Bitcoin core. And yeah, Libertarian Party is, you know, you could almost even say it's Bitcoin Satoshi vision, I would say.
Yeah. But you look at a perfect example and Roger Ver, he's, you know, a libertarian Bitcoin casher. Doesn't even, yeah, he doesn't recognize the chain with the most work.
That's right.
I would agree with that assessment. The Libertarian Party is definitely a shitcoin fork of Bitcoin. It's almost like it's like, you know, like Ethereum came around. I would almost consider Ethereum a fork of Bitcoin.
Of course. I don't know why every crypto is.
Yeah. Because the shitcoiners wanted to shitcoin on Bitcoin and they got chased off, right? They formed Ethereum, and then like, so, yeah, I'm not going to finish this tangent. Never mind. But maybe the Green Party is like Ethereum and Libertarian Party is like Bitcoin.
The Green Party is like Cardano. I don't know. There's too many. Maybe the parties would be better to associate with crypto if you were in Europe and they had more than two. But the...
So like the Uniparty is like the Dollar Party, right? Democrats, Republicans, they're the dollar party. Now, the real question is, who is the Bitcoin party? And I would say it's probably the cypherpunks, right? They're not necessarily, they're engaging in politics. They're politically active because they're doing things, but they're not always specifically engaging in the political sphere. And then there's kind of like anomalies like Dennis Porter, who are bipartisan or nonpartisan, however you want to describe it. He kind of oscillates between the two.
Orange Party.
What's that?
He's like the Orange Party.
Yeah.
It's like, but then you got to think about the orange. Is the Orange Party a separate political party, or is it better to work within the Republican Party, like David Bailey?
Well, David Bailey has obviously found one path to do that, I guess. I mean, he found himself at Mar-a-Lago. And, you know, he got Trump to show up and make some commitments that we've yet to see actually come to fruition. But I kind of think that the ultimate path is who has the most money to give to these politicians. So kind of doesn't matter what party, because during this last cycle of elections, you know, Chris Larson, head of Ripple, gave, and Coinbase, you know, they gave like $20 million to campaigns and took out quite a few politicians that were deemed pro-crypto. And I would say that is the winning calculus here. How much fiat can you throw at these politicians? Yeah.
Well, it's definitely There's also the side of it where you have to purchase influencers. So I'm not sure like how the structure is. So do you purchase the politician, then the politician purchases the influencers for you, or do you have to do both? Or does it kind of depend?
I think you have to do both. I think, of course, though, you know, the politicians, the political parties also buy the influencers for their own gains. But I think, yeah, you do have to buy the influencers along the way. And I think that, you know, I'm hopeful that that will provide a steady income for a lot of podcasters in this space too. So I think when we look at the big picture, that whatever is good for Chris Larson is good for Stephen Levera.
So you think that there's probably going to be a lot of money poured into the Bitcoin podcast game in the next couple of years, a lot of opportunities to be a engagement, you know, attention grabbing Bitcoin influencer, Bitcoin podcaster, who is going to help set important narratives like whether or not covenants should be allowed to pass, or whether they change, you know, they change the logo, or if they want to change the Bitcoin logo, or if they want to put a, I mean, Trump loves putting his branding on everything. Mm-hmm. What if Trump tries to change the Bitcoin logo and put, you know, some sort of Trump flip? What if they try to add like that little like flare that Trump's hair? They put that on top of the Bitcoin B, like Trump's bangs. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Or what if he just tries to make it not orange anymore? I mean, that's a real, you know, this sounds awesome to make money, but it comes with risks.
Yeah. What if he changes Bitcoin Park to Trump Park?
That could happen. That could happen. I think every Bitcoin Park has a price, and you know, it's just, you know, how high does Bitcoin have to go before you change the name of your Bitcoin building to Trump Park, or, you know, Pub Key to Trump Key, right? I think that there is a number go up with their names on it, and Trump Tower. Yeah, Trump. You know, we may see by the end of this 4-year cycle that Satoshis are no longer Sats or Satoshis, right?
Mm.
They may be Trumpets. I don't know.
Yeah, so that's a good point. So Donald Trump's going to take credit for Bitcoin going to the moon, but he's not going to be the only person. But there's going to be a lot of people taking credit for the God candle, for the biggest bull market in history. And, you know, some people are going to deserve that credit, like Dennis Porter. Dennis Porter is going to be claiming a lot of credit for the God candle, but allow me to say that he doesn't deserve it. Who do you think, or, you know, who would you put on the Mount Rushmore if you had to think about, like, who's going to be the people who deserve credit for Bitcoin having already won?
I'm really betting on Corey Klipstein.
Okay.
I'm really, really betting on him in this race. I mean, you know, Dennis has really proved himself to
absolutely be no doubt about
capable of taking credit for things. But let's not underestimate Corey.
You don't think Saylor? What about Saylor? Would he be on there too?
You know, I think Saylor doesn't. I feel like he has achieved a certain amount in terms of taking credit for Bitcoin's success. But I don't know. I feel that he's lacking something. And like the level of narcissism just isn't there. Mm. You know?
You don't think Michael Saylor is a narcissist?
No, I think he is. I just don't think that it's, you know, if on the scale, if we could rank, he's a third. He comes in third place.
Oh, you can't. Okay.
Yeah.
I figured progressive Bitcoiners would like Michael Saylor as a homosexual man.
I think he has a lot of appeal as a homosexual man. Yes. And he is not married. He doesn't have any children. So I think, as far as I know, so I think there's hope. I think he can redeem himself if he comes out and supports the woke ideology.
Right. Some people have said that Michael Saylor is heavy in the bags, but light in the feet.
Yeah, I've seen him. I've seen him soft shoe at parties, at Bitcoin conference parties. And he's always surrounded by men, young boys.
Young men just want to learn about thermal dynamics.
They're really taken by that.
I can't, like I said, we talked to fundamentals a few weeks ago. You can't blame somebody for noticing.
I mean, it's just there.
Sometimes you just notice things. Yeah.
You just notice. You know, you're just standing off the side having a conversation. You just glance over. There's Michael Saylor with light on his feet, surrounded by a young boy,
Walker from the Bitcoin podcast, from Crypto Couple.
It is what it is. You say what you want.
And as Svetsky ever, you ever seen Svetsky next to Michael Saylor? It seems like, I don't know, Saylor and Svetsky. It seems like Saylor might like Svetsky based on what you're saying.
The thing is that it's hard to find Svetsky at these events because he's so tiny.
Yeah.
He's so tiny. I mean, I was in an elevator with him once in Portugal, in Madeira, actually, and I almost stepped on him. I was really ashamed. Because I really care about respecting other people, not, you know, getting in their space. But he was so small that I almost smashed him. And I was horrified because I thought, you know, what would that do to Bitcoin podcasts if I had killed Svetsky by stepping on him in the elevator, just like smashing him like a little bug? I mean, where would...
Did he confide you about this? Did he say, hey, watch where you're going? It's commie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I apologized profusely. He squeaked a few, you know, little curse words here and there at me. And it was, you know, I took it because I did wrong. And I almost smashed him with my foot, with like a toe. So, yeah. But I was just, you know, I was just thinking about the horrors that would be, you know, if you didn't have this little Napoleon pushing, you know, these like really anti-women narratives in the space, like I would be out of a job. And I just couldn't fathom that.
Yeah. So yeah,
Svetsky's
good for Bitcoin. Yeah.
Yeah. Even Svetsky's good. And yeah, but to your question, I mean, as I said, it's hard to spot him, but it wouldn't surprise me if he and Saylor were best friends. Yeah. At these parties, you know, I think Saylor would like him. Yeah.
So I'm not entirely familiar with Alex Svetsky's anti-female. So is he against men transitioning to sell NFTs?
Oh, is yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. He definitely thinks that women, like one of the worst things that men ever did was give women the right to vote. So... I think that if men transitioned to be women to sell their NFTs, that, you know, he might start talking about bone sizes or something.
This is why we need laws to protect men from taking salary cuts or from being able to vote just because they transition.
I mean, that's a pretty radical policy to want to restrict trans women for voting.
Would you support a petition, or would you be, you know, maybe support the other direction if somebody like Svetsky wanted to propose a law that, you know, women didn't have to pay taxes? Would you be offended by that, or would you fight for your right? I mean, I think in my mind, a progressive female Bitcoiner would absolutely fight for a right to pay taxes.
Look,
is that how you feel?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, gay rights in the military was a really important thing. I think everyone has the right to put themselves out in the battlefield and be murdered or to go out into the battlefield, whether you're gay, straight, trans, or woke, to be able to take the lives of innocent brown people, and to die for Ukraine. So I completely think that this is totally in line. And yeah, it would be wrong to take away a woman's right to pay taxes. Hmm. I just couldn't support that. Yeah, I believe in gender equality in all areas.
Yeah, I mean, I think the more friendly policies towards homosexuals in the military was probably primarily out of necessity. So the CIA, for example, like really, really needed acceptance of homosexuality because so many of them were homosexual. For whatever reason, I'm just noticing, I'm not making a judgment here, but very many intelligence agents are homosexual for some reason. It might be because they're good candidates because they don't have kids, right? That might be like, if we're looking at Occam's razor, you know, people going and dealing with doing clandestine activities, like you don't want those types of people to have kids anyways. So they're good recruiting. You know, if you need to go spread democracy in Syria, for example, and to work with ISIS, like you don't want those types of individuals to have children.
Well, I think it's also, and this is why there's so many feds on Bitcoin Twitter, in spaces, in group chats, on Bitcoin podcasts, is because these CIA agents, be it them, you know, many of these gay CIA agents, they're really good at OPSEC. They know how to keep their main account, their docs, you know, their personal identity and their, you know, their Fed personality, their Fed NIM on Twitter, to keep those separate. And there's just, because they've learned to have good OPSEC and live double lives, they're able to maneuver undetected and collect intelligence. They collect intelligence on the other side. It's like, if, yeah, you know, it's like the show with Mel Gibson. He can hear what the women think. He's like an agent.
Yeah, and I think this brings us back to Saylor, because a lot of people think he is a CIA spook. So I think this would answer a lot of questions about Saylor's role and, you know, whether
he Saylor himself does have good OPSEC.
Yeah.
We don't know much about his personal life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, I think, yeah, that adds some fuel to the fire there. And I look forward to the day that Saylor transitions as well, because I think that would be really good for Bitcoin.
Yeah, me too. The last thing I want to say about Saylor just is I saw some pictures on Bitcoin Twitter, and I think American Model posted that Eric Kaysen was in Michael Saylor's, like, one of his ballrooms at his property. He said that Eric Kaysen was high on acid. I think that I read on Stacker News that Michael Saylor likes Eric Kaysen's rants, his Bitcoin rants, so much that it's almost like you hire a band or a comedian. He hires Eric Kaysen to private rants at his mansion. I just think that's so awesome. It's like, to have such good Bitcoin rants that you get to do private shows for Michael Saylor.
Yeah, I'm envious, because obviously I'm trying to build a cult of personality. So I really
like to
need
have a private to do like the rants, Bitcoin rants or whatever.
Yeah.
Would you do a favorite influencer who you would like your cult of personality to be friends with on Twitter?
Ooh, maybe Saifedean.
Ooh, yeah. That'd be a good one, yeah.
That'd be good.
Well, one of the topics I kind of wanted to wrap up with. So one of the big, there's two pieces of breaking news. During this recording, Bitcoin dipped below 100K and then went back above 100K. So Yellow doesn't have to start doing Don't Stop Believing spaces again.
Good. He deserves to retire.
Yeah, so this breaking story. So Stacey Herbert just retweeted the headline or the post that the Beagle did. discussing that Max Kaiser and Stacey Herbert have been evicted from El Salvador. So on the topic of political demagogues and cults of personalities, is this kind of a fall for grace for Nayib Bukele? And what do you see the outcome for the general Bitcoin ecosystem being with this news?
Are you on mute? I think you're on mute.
You're back. No, you're not back.
Sorry. I was watching What We Do in the Shadows, and it just started playing randomly. So I could hear it in the background. To stop it. Sorry about that. But yes. So, yeah, you know, this is really big news. I'm still digesting what this means for Bitcoin that Max Kaiser has been deported from El Salvador. The deal with the IMF sounds very good for fiat, very good for Tether. And I don't know. You know, this, I mean, it could, you know, they say everything is good for Bitcoin. So maybe this is good. Maybe this is somehow still good.
I read that, you know, the Bitcoin was being used by the plebs in El Salvador, but even though Bukele put a lot of people in prison, the Tether on Tron gang just, basically the Tether gang just kind of recaptured and, you know, kind of had a negotiation with Bukele. Now he's gone to Tether.
Yeah, I guess he thinks he could put more people in jail with Tether on Tron than with Bitcoin on Lightning.
Right, right.
So, exactly. You know, it's a gamble, but could work for him.
Now, yeah, if El Salvador, if Bukele is profiting from, you know, a very compliant country, they're going to have to have profits from prison. And if people are orange-pilled and they're using Bitcoin instead of Tether, they're going to be listening to Bitcoin podcasts, and there's just not going to be enough. Society is going to be too good. It's going to be too peaceful and too low crime for them to support the prison industrial complex. It's just Bitcoin fixes. People wouldn't go back to prison. They wouldn't offend. But Tether shitcoiners, they'll probably go back to crime.
Yeah. I think everybody needs an enemy. And Bukele realizes this. And if he allowed Bitcoin adoption to really flourish and allowed Max and Stacey to stay in the country as head of Bitcoin propaganda, that this really would be a threat to his model, because who would be the enemy at this point? So I think making Max Kaiser the enemy and adopting Tether is a really smart political move for him. And you know, pushes Bitcoin back into the U.S. and brings it full circle with Trump.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I can see
Trump coin.
I can see the argument. You know, if I lived in El Salvador, I would think that because of Max and Stacey, that Bitcoin was the gringos' money, and I would be more likely to want to use the money of the global South, my fellow citizens of the global South, which is Tether.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Tether really pushes a woke representation. They believe in diversity, and they're all for clean energy. You know, they believe in climate change. So apparently they've got some really interesting initiatives like that that are very, you know, that liberals love. So I think it's just really well aligned with this. And I think the gringo money just doesn't align.
It's a sad irony that due to Max's Stacey's tireless efforts to keep shitcoins out of El Salvador, that people didn't learn that it's actually Tether that's the gringo money. It's not Bitcoin. And they got it backward. They associated Bitcoin with Max and Stacey, and it just kind of soiled its reputation, I guess.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we need more diversity in our propaganda leaders. We're really lacking.
Absolutely.
We need a disabled black trans woman spelled with a Y to lead the propaganda department and to promote number go up at all costs in order for this to work. And we just don't have that. We don't have that. And I don't know what it's going to take for people like David Bailey, Odell, and everybody else in this space, in the media space, the influencer space, to really realize that it's time. It's time for them to step aside and embrace diversity in our propaganda.
Absolutely.
And I, for one, support seeing Dennis Porter becoming Denise Porter. And if it takes him getting in the suntan booth or, doing some insane plastic surgery to add a little bit more melanin to his skin, I would support this.
I personally, the highest profile transition that I'm looking forward to is Matt Odell becoming a woman, because as a woman, I think he'd be pretty hot, or she would be pretty hot.
Well, he's got beautiful hair, so he's already pretty close to being an amazingly attractive woman.
I think one last question I have for you is I want to know what your thoughts on Kim Jong-un are, because one, I think he would identify as a socialist. Two, he, as a world leader, has been into Bitcoin longer than anybody else. He was like the OG Bitcoin president, putting best Korea on a Bitcoin standard first, well long before El Salvador. But I want to understand your thoughts on why people like David Bailey and the PodConf ecosystem in general has rejected fearless leader Un in favor for some of these other politicians like Bukele, who are now stabbing us in the back.
Yeah, I think there's an irony there, because if we recall when Trump first came into office in 2016, that he actually reached out to Kim Jong-un, to the supreme leader of the Korean People's Republic. And I think there's a missed opportunity there, truly a missed opportunity. And I think there's a missed opportunity for Bitcoiners to learn, to really learn from Kim Jong-un and to learn from how they run their society on a Bitcoin standard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's a missed opportunity. I can't really get into the head of David Bailey, nor do I want to. But if I could, I would maybe rewire a few things, including, I would make it so that he had gender dysphoria so he would become a woman, because I think that would help. I think that would help him understand.
I think David would make a great woman, honestly.
I think so.
He has the emotional excitability of a woman. He gets very, very bullish, very, very, very bullish, and just kind of, hysterical on the timeline sometimes. I think he'd make, I think he'd do great.
It would help him, and it would help Bitcoin Magazine sell NFTs.
Oh, yeah. He'd have to shave his beard, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think Bitcoiners are ready for that.
Well, his mother helps run Callie. She helps run the Women in Bitcoin brunch every year at the BTC, main BTC conference. So he's not, I think he would be openly embraced in the community, in the Women in Bitcoin community, and if he did
not
it at
Planeter.
But I think Natalie Brunell would.
Oh, yeah. She would probably double cross Corey and reach out to David.
Why do you think, I know there's certain organizations like the Human Rights Foundation, for example, that are very, very attached to promoting the U.S. Department of Defense's foreign policy, essentially. Are they the ones that are, you know, actively working against North Korea getting proper recognition from the Bitcoin community? Or who is the they behind this? And what do you think their goals are here? Because it seems to me like they're slowing Bitcoin adoption.
Well, you know, the Human Rights Foundation really supports medium of exchange, Bitcoin, and really supports anti-authoritarians who fight against despotic regimes. And I think that that is in conflict. It's in conflict with the goals of podcasters in this space. And the PodConf, that really violates the goals of PodConf, I think. You know, number go up at all costs. And so, yeah, I do think that the Human Rights Foundation is really one of the core impediments to reaching out to Kim Jong-un and to really bringing the, you know, nation states into the fold on this Bitcoin strategic reserve, Bitcoin standard. We don't talk about it enough. You know, right. It's kind of like the elephant in the room.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Before we go to the lightning boost, I want to give you an opportunity real quick to talk about your podcast and what you're going to be talking about, what you're going to be exploring with the podcast. And then most importantly, how are you going to resist the influences and pressures of PodConf now that you are on their radar?
Yeah, so the Progressive Bitcoiner is a podcast. I think it's been around since the end of 2021. And our goal is to highlight voices in the space and that are adjacent to Bitcoin that appeal to a different audience that comes more out of a left-leaning perspective to really tie in, the human rights narratives and the social good of Bitcoin. So that's what we do. And, you know, just want to like lighten up the space a little bit, because I find that a lot of podcasts are like too serious. They take themselves too seriously. And I'm trying to add a little humor to this and just, you know, make Bitcoin fun. So that's what we're doing, and we release an episode every month. And then, yeah, how am I, you know, I got PodConf disapproved this summer. And so it inspired me to create an organization called the Ask Queen, which we haven't really touched on. And, you know, I really, all I did was give them a platform. And I said, look, let's just put a name to this. And I'm not really involved with them. I advise. But they're a ragtag bunch of queer, very queer, non-binary Bitcoiners who are DEI terrorists. And their mission is to undermine number grow up as much as possible. Yeah, using eCash. So that's what Yas Queen is about. So I think that if I can support them in any way possible, then I am doing something good to really counter PodConf. So that's how I try to, you know, I try to keep myself in a position where I keep PodConf at bay, because I've got this DEI terrorist organization backing me up, and they are not afraid to throw glitter bombs on people as necessary, you know, to sabotage the number go up. So I feel confident that they have my back when I need them, and I'm just really grateful that they exist.
Yeah. Go back to our website. We'll put it in the show notes if you want to read more about Yas Queen. And it's just, if you're wondering why you should be interested, in the world of quantum computing and quantum threats and the quantum entanglement, it's going to be important to have non-binary thinkers, because computation, it's not going to be binary anymore. So have to be able to understand that that vibe, I guess. Going into the biz, you want to start off the biz, Richard?
So do you know any about our last episode, what we did?
No.
Oh, yeah, we should probably give her context before we read that.
Yeah. So the last episode was titled Satoshi is Jewish. And we had fundamentals from the the Rock Paper Bitcoin podcast on. And he is a Jew that happens to notice things. And so we had an interesting discussion. I don't know if that's enough context.
She could always ask more questions if she's
the hell is that? I have no idea what this means, but I guess I'll just play along.
All right. So our first boost for 100,000 sats, big boost, is from Rakan, who says, from the synagogue of Satan to the synagogue of Segwit, and from Jesus of Nazareth to Satoshi Nakamoto, nobody can deny that our world continued to be passed from one Jew to another, which makes me want to start training for a visit to the Wailing Wall. I hear you have to have a strong pelvis muscle to do humping moves in an appropriate manner. 100 humps till fiat dumps. That's one of the more interesting boosts.
Yeah. I mean, I'm also Jewish, so I would say that working the pelvic muscle is really important for davening, for prayer at the Wailing Wall. And I think that's, you know, not anybody can do this. It does help to, you know, have part of your penis cut off. It does give you a certain magical advantage that I can't deny is true.
It looks better, right? It just looks better. Attractiveness is an advantage.
It is. You know? God likes it. God, you know, is homosexual.
God likes.
So,
yes.
I would say do those Kegels, and if you need to see a pelvic therapist, go for it.
Circumcision.
Yeah, I mean,
it's better. Okay.
What are your thoughts on this idea that Satoshi could have been Jewish?
Well, you know, Satoshi is larger than life in the same way that Jesus was larger than life, and Jesus was a Jew. So I think it's just a logical progression that one would think that Satoshi is Jewish.
We were thinking kind of along the same lines. It's just, you know, who doesn't appreciate prices going down? Who doesn't like to see number go up? They already control the money. Why wouldn't they control the rest of the money, the artist money, right? It's like, it's just, you know, but fundamentals, yeah, it was his theory. And people really thought it was interesting, I guess. So, because that's, I guess we'll get to that in the boost. The next one is from Shadrach. Shadrach's one of our most loyal OG intellectual Silk Road members. Heart and a cigarette emoji. Pay us 23,232 sats.
Bless his soul.
Thank you, Shadrach. Shadrach, this is kind of cool. So one of his buddies he introduced to my music, and he was learning how to play it on guitar. Posted a pretty cool video on Noster.
Yeah, it's we'll just play it and just put the link in the show notes because it is a good video.
Yeah, I missed that. I got to see that.
I mean, it only took me about 15 minutes to actually be able to watch the video because Primal wouldn't connect to the relays. It was pretty arduous. I'm not sure. I don't think it's my typewriter that's the issue. I think Primal is experiencing some disruptions. But this is what you have to, the price you have to pay as an innovator. You know what I mean? Like you have to, well, thank you for the boost, Shadrach. Next boost is from Fundamentals for 21,000 Sats, who says, congrats on making podcast history. Good luck following this episode.
I think we followed it up pretty. I don't think he's going to be disappointed in the way we followed it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think he's going to be disappointed we had another Jew on the show to follow him up.
And didn't mention him for so long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. That's one thing about Fundamentals is he will always let you know he's Jewish very quickly.
And then apologize. The next one is from Jason. Thank you for the shout out to our humble 100-day celebration. Fundamentals helps run a great meetup and is the best guest on your show. Keep up the great work. Seeing the Bitcoin scene needs Rod and Dick. Thank you, Jason.
That's very nice. I agree. I think I just don't know where we'd be without the Bugle.
I don't either.
I wish we had a time machine to be able to go into the future and read the boost of this episode with you. That'd be pretty interesting.
I think those would be not as kind.
So there's this issue, which is in order to get a time machine, humanity has to smoke an enormous amount of cigarettes and increase our cigarette consumption exponentially. But one of the reasons why I think a lot of people on the left don't like cigarettes, not all of them dislike cigarettes. There's some base people on the left, is they're afraid of the carbon emissions from humanity smoking in mass. It's just a theory I have. Curious if you have any thoughts.
I mean, there are a lot of cigarettes, and you do have to light them, and you are burning organic material in the process. So, you know, you are putting CO2 into the atmosphere to a certain degree, right? So,
they should make clean tobacco.
I do think that the solution is clean tobacco, and I think that the narratives around it have traditionally been about health and avoiding cancer. But I think, you know, the emissions story is much bigger than we're led to believe. And I do believe that we need people on the left to understand that if they just use a filter, this could solve a lot of problems.
Well, I think one of the problems that, you know, I'm really frustrated with the conversation about smoking, because I feel so many people are being intellectually dishonest. So there's many people that promote vaping as like the green version of smoking. You know what I mean? It's kind of like the electric vehicle versus combustion engine debate that's going on right now. The real issue here is not necessarily the emissions, because to charge the vape, you create the same amount of CO2 of it being essentially charged by a coal plant. And it could be argued that cigarettes are cleaner than coal plants, right? The real issue here at the end of the day, though, is the waste. The one thing that's beneficial about cigarettes compared to vapes is that cigarettes are biodegradable.
They don't require rare earth minerals and slaves to mine them.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, this is...
It's a lot to think about.
I think Greta Thunberg, I think, needs to hear this, because we may be going at this the wrong way. This belief, this false sense of security that we could solve the issue of cigarettes by replacing them with technology, you know, advanced technology, semiconductors, it's probably a myth.
Yeah, plus tariffs are going to make them more expensive anyway.
Right, they're all they're all built and made in China. So you might as well just, you know, I mean, like the movement towards eating more organic food, buying food locally, not using plastic. I think there is an argument that can be made that we should just go back to smoking regular cigarettes. Yeah. For the save the environment, smoke a Marlboro Red. I could see this at the next climate protest. Yeah,
that's a new save a horse riding cowboy.
Yeah.
I like this line of thinking. I mean, smoking cigarettes only leads to a net benefit to humanity. So I think we settled that. So humanity has the right, because like all the carbon emissions from more people smoking cigarette would promote the Bitcoin price, which would make mining more profitable, which means that Bitcoin mining would fight climate change more and therefore offset the carbon emissions from cigarette smoking. It's kind of an incredible feedback loop.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're all about closing the loop on this stuff, you know, creating these closed systems, and Bitcoin fixes this again. So, yeah, congratulations, Bitcoin. You've solved another problem. It's all in a day's work.
Thank you for your boost, Jason.
I'm sad.
Well, I'll just blast through these real quick. So we got Pies for 1,000 sats. So Pies is our number one listener, always consistent. Message says, yo. Beer emoji, mushroom emoji, flexing emoji, fist emoji. Well, thank you, Pies. User, and then a bunch of numbers. Let me see if I can see their Noster profile. Daddy-O on Noster says, just for mentioning Michelle Weekly, fire emoji, fire emoji. You got any thoughts on Michelle Weekly?
I try not to. Try not to have thoughts about her. It's for the, you know, she's interesting.
Most of us, you know, that believe in OPSEC, we try to avoid the Michelle Weeklies, if you know what I mean.
It's very wise.
Boost from Abile for 500 sats says, this is one of the best podcasts of the year, Bitcoin theocratic or otherwise. Never even the Iron Dome can stop Bitcoin, but likewise, not even the most repressive censorship can stop quality journalism. I agree. No way can the Iron Dome stop Bitcoin.
Definitely not. Definitely has not stopped Bitcoin at all.
Little Kev for 420 sats says, huge breaking Dennis Porter. Hell yeah. Dennis is always breaking the internet. And then 100 sats from Pies again says, rock, paper, Bitcoin, and the Bugle, LFG, motherfuckers, 40 hours of Bitcoin podcast, 40 hours a week of Bitcoin podcast. But yeah, I guess the final question before we wrap up this interview is there's only one progressive Bitcoin podcast. I don't think there's very many left-leaning Bitcoin podcasts. How can people on the left listen to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week despite the deficiency in supply of podcasts?
Well, there's two things. One, we could have more people create progressive podcasts. And then the other option is really just to hit the repeat button and just keep listening to them over and over again until you've memorized all the words to every episode of the Progressive Bitcoiner. And I personally think that's probably the best thing. I would love to see people, you know, just listen to me on repeat over and over again, because I think, as I said, it would help me build my cult of personality. So ideally, that's what I want, but I think it would the alternative would be, yeah, let's get more people creating progressive content and get the more people who are doing that, the better. I think, you know, reaching out to other progressives, talking about Bitcoin. I think that's probably the best thing. I always advocate for more content, just more content. Yeah, we want to hit we do want to hit 40 hours of podcasts. So we just need more people. And I have to say, Trey Walsh is working on that, because actually, so Trey is turning the Progressive Bitcoiner into a nonprofit organization. So he wants to really start building out a lot of content around the Progressive Bitcoiner beyond the show. So I'm hopeful that, you know, we'll be able to eventually join the ranks of 40 hours a week of Progressive Bitcoin podcast, Bitcoin content.
Very cool. Well, I am confident the bull market will bring that. Well, thank you for coming on the show. Really enjoyed this interview. And I'm excited to see what you do with your podcast going forward, as well as your academic research and pursuit of credentials.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And I'm really excited to see all of the male podcasters transitioning in the coming years. So that's something I'm really grateful for. So thank you. Thank you.